Sorry for that. Well, that happens, guys. It's college radio. This is Titania, and you're listening to radio.dominican.edu here in Penguin Radio. We are a nerdy, like every Monday at 9. Actually, it would be this is the last Monday I'm going to be here at 9 p.m. But next Monday, I'm not going to be here, and perhaps in 2 weeks I'm going to be here again, but that will be my last show in this radio, guys. That's kind of sad. I'm kind of bummed about that. But let's enjoy it while it lasts. It has been an awesome journey here at radio.dominican.edu. Okay, I have an awesome show for you guys today. As always, we have our three segments. The Quibbler, the middle segment, the new, the old, and the ugly, has had some transformation this week, as it had last week. And I'm going to give you some recommendations for pixel art games today. And on the last segment of the show, The Hitchhiker's Guide to Middle Earth, we're going to talk about Tolkien and his works. So let's jump right in to the news section, The Quibbler. Okay, so the first piece of news that I have for you today is that there was people have recovered the first ever text adventure game that was called Wander. It's playable only on Mac, actually, and that's kind of a bummer because I'm a PC gamer, not a Mac gamer. But okay, I don't know if there's any Mac gamers out there, any serious Mac gamers anyway. But this game, Wander, is one of the earliest, if not the first ever text adventure, and it has been recovered. And this is very, very interesting because it was a mainframe interaction fiction created by Peter Langston. It was created in 1974, and it predates the more well-known classics like Adventure. And it wasn't just a game, but it was a toolkit, similar to modern text adventure systems like Inform 7. And the original description refers to itself as a tool for writing non-deterministic fantasy stories. It was first coded in BASIC, possibly in 1973, before being rewritten in C. And you can read more about it in a blog called Retroactive Fiction, which wrote the original post detailing the revival of this game called Wander. And if you didn't catch that, the blog is called Retroactive Fiction. So that's pretty exciting. Next, we have Batman, the trailer for another trailer, in fact, for Arkham Knight, reveals is a really strong word in this case, but it shows that you may be able to play with Robin on top of playing with Batman, kind of in a dual play mechanic. It's a very interesting trailer. I mean, it also shows Catwoman being there. It's not as pre-rendered as other trailers, and I like that. But at the same time, I mean, I'm not as excited for Arkham Knight. And I mean, don't judge me because of that. But I'm kind of, it's growing old, you know, because it's the same mechanics, the same things. And it's like, do you get a kick from the same Assassin's Creed games over and over? I guess you do because you buy them as a public. But I don't know. I am going to buy it, and I am going to play it. Not in the first few weeks, I guess, but because I'm not going to pay $60 for it. But it does not excite me as Arkham City did. So that's that. Then we have this very, very sad news about Konami and the Silent Hills game. Well, Silent Hills, as you know, was officially canceled today. Guillermo del Toro said yesterday that he was withdrawing from the project, and there were speculations that it was going to be canceled. And today, Kojima said that he was not going to pull through with the game. And that's kind of sad for us who wanted a game like that, especially after the playable trailer that was really, really amazing. Also, if you want to keep on playing that, or like to hang on to that, you may want to download it really fast, because it's going to be pulled from the PlayStation Store really soon. But that's really sad for Konami. And also, because of this, later on today, Konami, the company stopped trading on the New York Stock Exchange. So it pulled from the New York Stock Exchange, but it kept on, like, it has presence still in London and in Tokyo. But, I mean, this is really weird. It is not going through a good patch. It is rumored that after the release of Metal Gear Solid 5, Kojima will step back from Konami, and this will be a blow for the company. Because Kojima is such a great figure, it seems like the company is not making so many sales, so much money in games, and it's gaining all of its money from the pachinko, that is the gambling machines present in Japan. So it actually doubled its income from that. So apparently maybe we're not gonna see any more Konami games. I don't know, maybe that's the future, and that's kind of sad. Related to this, Dimension the Ward, this was a game that was pitched to Konami as a DS game that could belong to the Silent Hill franchise, let's say, but it was rejected as part of that franchise, and now it's the franchise of Dimension. It's let's say the Dimension franchise. It's being remastered for Nintendo 3DS, so they have the first. They have a remake of the first-person survival horror game for the DS, being remastered for the 3DS. But there's no talk of the Dimension the Ward that was kind of the sequel. So that's that. Next on, we have the reveals this week that have been quite a talk, especially the Jared Leto thing. But first, we have the X-Men Apocalypse Nightcrawler, and the picture is quite stunning. I mean, I think it's time for Nightcrawler to get his film. I am quite a fan of the character, and if they do it right, it's gonna be amazing. The release of X-Men Apocalypse is in May 2016, and I'm guessing that this film will be later, but it will be amazing. I have so much faith in it, and I'm guessing that it will be amazing. I'm just stunned at the picture. I'm looking at it right now, and you should go check it out if you haven't yet. And I'm guessing, and I'm sorry that I keep on saying that, but I cannot be sure, that you have seen already the Jared Leto picture as the Joker, the supposedly official picture. Well, there has been quite a talk about it. Some people are haters from it, like they don't like the tattoos, they don't like the teeth, the grills, they don't like this, they don't like that. Well, apparently David Ayer, that's the director, who tweeted the picture also said today that the Joker will not have that look. So he said exactly through his Twitter, "Here's something that might be of interest to you comic book fans. The promo picture of Leto in Suicide Squad isn't what he'll look like." So, as I said last week, guys, please stop with this pseudo-hype, pseudo-thing. He tried to do something. It kind of failed. I personally liked the picture. I heard a lot of people saying that he looked like Marilyn Manson. And although that's true, kind of, I think that it's kind of a look that works for the Joker. I mean, he is mentally unstable, mentally insane. And Manson, that's kind of the image of himself that he was trying to portray. Not that Brian Warner is insane in any way, because he's not. But he was, in his glory days, he was trying to portray that image. And the Joker is that. So I don't see what's the problem with that. The Joker has, in the comics, this big dragon tattoo. And I don't see why he couldn't have any other tattoos. People are such haters. And then when they look at the movies, then they come out from the movies and are all so surprised, so amazed. And they have the following, the opposing feeling when for movies such as Avengers Age of Ultron, like, they had all this hype, they were so sure it was going to be great, and then when they are proved wrong at the cinema, they just don't have the guts to just tell the world that they were wrong and that the movie sucks. Okay, talking about Age of Ultron, it's getting an alternate ending and an extended cut for its Blu-ray and DVD release. Although it has not yet been released in cinemas all over the world, this has already been announced. And I kind of remember the Guardians of the Galaxy thing when they announced the second movie before the first one was even released yet. But this is not like to par with that. So please stop. I knew that movie was gonna flunk. And next on to another very distressing topic, very sad topics this week. Valve, you know what happened with the whole thing. Valve tried to implement a system where, especially they tried to start the system with Skyrim, where mods could have a price set by the modder himself. So the modder could say, oh, my mod costs $5, or people can give me money for this mod, I mean, whatever they like. That, like, they had a choice. But people went berserk. I mean, berserk. And they had a point, because this could turn into a snowball. I mean, who are modders in the industry? They are not freelancer DLC artists. So what is this? Why? It's not the problem. The problem is not that they're getting paid, but the problem is that the 75% of the money that people were paying for a mod was going either to Valve or to, in this case, Bethesda, the developer of the game, and not the modder himself, who was getting only 25% of the money that was being inputted, that was being paid from the customer. So that was very distressing for people. That was something that was not okay. I mean, I was really against it. That was my particular opinion. And not because I don't think that some modders, I guess, do a particular job and a great job in creating alternate missions and alternate weaponry, or just enhancing the game's experience and creating more great content for the game. I think that modders do that. But I think that it's a community thing and not something that people and especially companies should impose or should try to gain money from. And I thought that that was somewhat disloyal from Valve. But I do give Gavin and Valve the credit of pulling back when they heard the opinion of the public. So a lot of people just filled out this thing in change.org that as one does, and a lot of people, like, it was thousands of people, and they were just bitching in, oh, I'm sorry for that, they were just going berserk in the forums. They were just not leaving the company alone. So they just decided to pull back from this payment feature. And actually, this pulling back, it would cost them a lot of money in refunds, like 2.2K. So that's a lot of money, guys. And I appreciate Valve doing this. And I think that Valve, without its public, without the ability to come from its public, it's very hard. And I think that Valve is doing a great job in this respect right now. So what Gavin said exactly, what Valve said in a release, they just released this in their page, said that they had done this because it was clear that they hadn't understood exactly what they were doing, and they had been shipping many features over the years that were aimed at allowing community creators to receive a share of the rewards, and in the past they've been received well. It's obvious that this case was different. In this case, they are talking about the mods corresponding to Team Fortress 2, Dota, and stuff of the like, that many modders in those kinds of games receive a part of the shares. So they get money from what they're creating, but the money doesn't come from the players, it comes from the companies. And I get what they were trying to do with this. They were trying to not only gain money, I guess that's the main point of all of this in the end, but trying to look at it in a good light, let's say that they were trying to encourage very talented people that are in the modding community to create mods that were better and better each day, and trying to go into this business without the need to be patronized by a company, so without the need to have a job necessarily. So that's good, because a person can just go and then create a game, for example, that's just a mod of something. And we have seen examples of this in the past, that they became great products like Dota, Counter-Strike, They Seed, Killing Floor. I mean, these are very important games nowadays that they started out as mods. So this is a community that is not to be ignored. And I do understand where they're coming from, but it was not the way. I do feel that some modders are so great that they need some acknowledgement in the form of money, but I do believe that they should get all the money from it. Because although they're using the engine from the game, this engine was given to them free. So why should the developer get money from that if they're giving it out for free? It doesn't make sense to me. Moving on, you know that Attack on Titan is getting a second compilation movie, and the trailer is out. So that's that. Attack on Titan for the second season. You'll have to wait until next year. That's a lot of time, guys. And I have heard from my friends that are fans that they cannot wait. So that's really, really bad. But I have another movie that will probably get you going if you're a Disney fan. It's not that exciting, but at the same time, I kind of want to watch it. It's called Descendants, and it's a teen movie. I know, it's really, really crappy if you look at it with, like, mature eyes. But I want to see it. I don't know. Don't judge me. It's supposedly the story of the sons and daughters of the villains from the movies that were kept apart in an island. And now they're being called back. They're being summoned to come to high school with the sons and daughters of the princes and princesses. So that's that. Kind of a crappy Disney Channel movie. But I want to watch it. Don't judge. And finally, we have Joss Whedon that he says and says again that he wants to direct a DC movie, although he's kind of hooked with the Marvel Universe. Joss, I just wish you luck with that. Maybe you will not get it. Maybe you will. Who knows? We're going on to a break right now. This is DJ Titania with Nerd Nerd Nerdy at radio.dominican.edu. And I'll see you after the break with some recommendations for pixel art video games.
I cannot accept that course of action. I cannot accept that course of action. My computer is the best on Earth.
This is DJ Scrappy here. Tune in at 11 every Friday for Worldwise, a show about science, technology, and the environment. You can also find us at radio.dominican.edu under Student Shows.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger! Danger, Will Robinson, danger!
I saw the light fade from the sky. On the wind I held a sigh. As the snowflakes cover my fallen brothers, I will say this last goodbye. Night is now falling, so ends this day. The road is now calling, and I must away. Over hill and under tree, through lands where never light is shone, by silver streams that run down to the sea. Under cloud, beneath the stars, over snow on winter's morn, I turn at last to paths that lead home. And oh, where the road then takes me, I cannot tell. We came all this way, but now comes the day to bid you farewell. Many places I have been, many sorrows I've seen, but I don't regret, nor will I forget all who took that road. Now for me, so ends this day. and Thunder Tree, through lands where never light is shone, by silver streams that run down to the sea. To these memories I will hold, with your blessing I will go, to turn at last to paths that lead home. And oh, where the road then takes me, I cannot tell. We came all this way, but now comes the day to bid you farewell.
That was Billy Boyd with I Must Away. No, it's not. It's The Last Goodbye. I'm sorry. But it's just, he says I must away so many times during the song that it just, it sticks with me. And it's from the Hobbit soundtrack from the Battle of the Five Armies. And just so you know, this is DJ Titania and this is Nerd Nerdy at radio.dominican.edu. And right now we're entering the second segment of the show where I recommend you some things that I like. And right now, today, is going to be some pixel art games. And I have quite a few for you because pixel art games are something that I like quite a lot because they're fun, they're indie, they're new, they're snappy in a way. Well, it depends. They have a kind of humor that I like. It's something that I find throughout the whole bunch of these. Not all of them, but the majority of them have a humor or a way of expressing themselves that I quite like, that I find interesting and new and fresh, rather, compared to AAA titles. So starting with this list, I have Nidhogg for you. Nidhogg is a game, it's a versus game, so it's like a battle game where you are you're kind of a guy who has a sword. So this you duel with your friends and this in different environments. So you have a castle, you have the clouds, you have the moors, and these environments have different features to themselves and you can use them to your advantage. And the whole point of the game is to kill your friend and run towards the other end of the screen, following different screens until you reach the end and the goal. And this is a game that will kill many friendships if you let it, because it's very, very competitive and it's very, very quick. It's kind of like Mario Kart in that sense. So it won the IndieCade 2014 Game Design Award and the 2011 Independent Games Festival Nuovo Award. It was released in January 13, 2014. And later it was ported for other platforms, but it was first released for PC. It is $15 on Steam. And the whole point of the game is just to beat one friend. It's amazing, guys. You can spend hours playing this game. Just going, if you just played this game in a party and just figured out a way to make it a tournament, it would be amazing. It's just so competitive and so good. Next on the list, I have DLC Quest. This is a very short game, but it's very, very funny. It has a lot of humor, and it, of course, it's very sarcastic because you start the game and you have to buy all the basic movements for your character. You have to buy how to move left, you have to buy how to jump, you have to buy color, you have to buy everything. And everything is a DLC. And that's kind of the point. It's $3 on Steam. And the game also has a compelling story. And also it's a comedic story, of course. I'm not going to spoil it because it's fun to just go through. And it's worth the $3, I must say. It's so funny. And you should buy it. Then we have Fez, and this is a very controversial game, but I do think that it's worth buying and trying at least once. It is a 2012 indie puzzle platform game. That's a mouthful. But the whole point of it is that you are a character called Gomez that receives a Fez. And this Fez gives him the ability to go from the two-dimensional world in which he lives in to a 3D world and to change perspectives into different 2D worlds that are within the 3D world that he didn't know existed. So to finish the game, what you must do is collect cubes and cube fragments to restore the order of the universe that has been that just was broken. And although I hate the guy who created it, that's called Phil Fish, I hate him. This is a game that you can play in many circumstances, if you know what I mean, and you can just chill out and zone out and just play the game with your controller. And that's kind of the point. And it has an emphasis, of course, on discovery and freedom. But it never ends, basically. You're just always discovering new things. It's amazing. I never played it thoughtfully. I just played a few hours because I felt a little bit overwhelmed with the whole thing of discovering. Although I'm not the kind of person that goes through a game trying to get all the secrets, because I never do. I do try to explore the whole map, for example. And that's something that I don't know if you can do in Fez. And it's really frustrating if you're like me. But at the same time, it's liberating if you look at it in another perspective. It's really nice. The music's soothing, and it's just like swimming with no point at all. Then we have... and also it's $10 on Steam. Also we have Rogue Legacy. Rogue Legacy is also one of the funny ones. This is an indie platform game, and it has roguelike elements. And it was released in 2013. The idea of the game is to explore a randomly generated dungeon, defeat 4 bosses in each of the 4 unique environments of the dungeon, and then defeat the final boss. Each of the characters that you have in Rogue Legacy have the default ability to jump, slash with their sword, and magic attacks. But the point of it is that when you die, you have to choose one of the heirs of the character you just used to continue the game. And there's a possibility of these characters to have different genetic peculiarities, such as color blindness, so the game will show in black and white. The character may have ADHD, so it may move faster. You may have dwarfism, so their character may be really, really short, and you can get through different spaces, like different small gaps in the game. You may also have, like, be really, really large, and you may also have different other peculiarities, genetic peculiarities, and this makes each run of the game different. And that makes it interesting, because if not, it's just another platformer that randomly generates the dungeon. And it's very entertaining. You can keep on playing it forever, actually. It also has, you learn it really quickly, and also the amount of time that it takes for you to learn, for you to pay for all the abilities is not so long. So you can invest a whole bunch of time in it, and you will be satisfied, and at the same time really wanting more, but not disappointed. It's really good. It's a good balanced game. It costs $15 on Steam, but it's also an only one player game, as have been the last three games that I've mentioned. But the next one, called Crawl, is a roguelike brawler indie video game, and the idea of the game is that you play with either three other friends in a local co-op mode. So you're the four of you are sitting in a couch, let's say. You're not playing, each one of you is not playing in their house. So you're sitting on a couch with three other friends, and the three other friends are the monsters in the dungeon, and you are the character. So that's a twist, kind of like Evolve, but the other way around. So the point is that you must survive, and the ghost player who kills the human hero swaps the roles and then becomes the next main player. The monsters and the ghosts control all that happens, and all the traps and the difficulties that the character encounters throughout the dungeon. And it starts becoming more difficult as you progress. It's not that they have all the control in that respect. So the typical match lasts about 30 minutes, and it's really entertaining. So you can't just have that in your house and just say, oh, let's play a game of Crawl. So that's kind of, it's really innovative. That's what I like about this game. It is on Steam Early Access. It was released last year. It will be a year on August 6th. And it sounds really amazing, doesn't it? I mean, it's $10 on Steam. Next, we have another cult favorite. It's called Risk of Rain, if you haven't heard about it. And it's an action platformer that also has roguelike elements. The idea of Risk of Rain is that you control the survivors of a space freighter crash on a strange planet. And the player progresses through levels that are selected randomly, of course, and the idea is that you kill the monsters, collect the items, blah blah. But as you, it's kind of like a mess when you see when you see a screen cap of Risk of Rain, you think, like, what is that? How will I ever be able to play that? But in fact, it's really compelling. And the thing that makes it most compelling, in my opinion, is that you can play it multiplayer, you can play it local call player mode, you can play it whatever. It's amazing. And it's only $10 on Steam. And, of course, all of these games, you can find them in different sales along the board. But Risk of Rain is one of the favorites. And it looks amazing, although it is a mess until you understand what are the things that the screen is trying to say to you. Then, yet another cult favorite, we have Shovel Knight. And of course, you're a knight that attacks with a shovel and digs. It is a two-side scrolling platformer, and it is amazing. What should I say? It is amazing. It's trying to evoke the 8-bit graphic era, the SNES era. So it's kind of, it's amazing, guys. You should play it. It's only $15. Go buy it. Go play it. There's nothing else to it. I mean, it's really, really amazing. And finally, the one that really caught my eye, because I'm, as a music lover, it is amazing for me. It's called Crypt of the Necrodancer, and it was released this year. And the idea of the game is, on top of being a roguelike dungeon exploring game, you have the idea of moving with the beat of the music and moving to the rhythm. And this makes the game easier and difficult at the same time, because the monsters have different patterns of movement and you can predict what they're gonna do. So the idea is that you move to attack them when they're weak, blah blah, whatever, you know what to do. But it's amazing. And the two most amazing things that this game has is that, first, you can play it with a pressure pad, like a dance pad, and you can also put your own music on it. So you can actually just like dance to your own music with the game. Isn't that amazing? I think it is amazing. If you don't think it is amazing, I don't know who you are. Who are you? Just go away. So we're going on to another break here at radiodominican.edu. This is DJ Titania, and you're listening to Nerd Nerd Nerdy. And I'll see you in the next segment with The Hitchhiker's Guide to Middle Earth.
Oh, misty eye of the mountain below, keep careful watch of my brother's souls. And should the sky be filled with fire and smoke, keep watching over your sons. If this is to end in fire, then we shall all burn together. Watch the flames climb high to the night, calling out, Father, oh, stand by and we will watch the flames burn over and on the mountainside. High. And if we should die tonight, we should all die together, raise a glass of the flames burn over and on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain. I see fire burning the trees. And I see fire hollow. So I see fire, blood in the breeze, and I hope that you remember me. Oh, should my people fold, and surely I'll do the same. Too close to the flame, calling out, Father, oh, hold fast.
lost and we will watch the flames burn over and on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain. I see fire burning the trees. I see fire hollow in the soul. I see fire blood in the breeze. And I hope that you remember me. And if the night
was Ed Sheeran with Eyes of Fire from the last Hobbit movie, The Battle of the Five Armies. And I think that song is amazing. I mean, I don't like Ed Sheeran a lot, but if that song isn't amazing, guys, I don't know what is amazing in this world anymore. So, this is Penguin Radio. You're listening to Nerd or Nerdy, and this is DJ Titania. Very tired, DJ Titania. It was a tough weekend, guys. I'm not gonna lie. But that's life. So, moving on to the last segment of the show, we have The Hitchhiker's Guide to Middle-Earth. And I have seen a pattern here here in the Americas. That's not right. Here in the United States of America. That's right. There's a lot of people that haven't either watched the films or read something from Tolkien, and that made me quite disappointed. That's not right. I mean, John R.R. Tolkien, he's one of my mentors. He's one of the persons throughout the story, throughout the history of the world, that has changed my life. He is an English writer, poet, philologist, university professor, and if you don't know who the bleep I'm talking about, he is the author of the classic high fantasy works like The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, and the Silmarillion. It's hard to say in English, guys. He lived throughout the 20th century, although he was born in the 19th century. And he dedicated his life to philology and writing. He was amazing in that respect. And we nerds, we fantasy lovers, we Middle Earth lovers, we people in general, in truth, should just kiss the ground that he walked in. And I mean this not because the quality of his writing was amazing, because it's not the best in that there was at the moment, and it's not the best that there is today. You can find things in fantasy that are better or perhaps more suited to the mind of today. They are quite the every one of them, The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, Silmarillion, especially Silmarillion, are not works that are to be taken lightly. They're very, very hard to read if you don't have the right set of the right mindset. They're very slow. They're filled with description because Tolkien was exploring the language. His goal was to explore the language. He did not. His goal was not to tell a story per se. That was kind of a secondary thought. He was trying to give a story, give a background, give a mythology to the to his languages, his created languages, Kenya and Sindarin, and later on the Numenorean, etc. He is a figure that just strikes me. I remember that the first book that my mother ever read to me was Harry Potter, okay? But after that, I remember my mother reading to me The Hobbit. And after we finished The Hobbit, we started with The Lord of the Rings. And I was 7 at the time. And I remember us reading the book. We had this big book with the illustrations, this big illustrations like by Alan, I don't know who. And that they are the classic illustrations that you see for The Lord of the Rings. And I will never forget those nights. I will never forget the first time I ever read The Lord of the Rings. And it marked my childhood. I fell in love with fantasy from then on. And if I wasn't already a nerd, I was a nerd then. And I mean that in the best kind of way possible. I mean, I know this show is called Nerd and Nerdy, but for those of you who are nerds but just think that the word nerd is too much, just why? It's not bad. It's just a word. And, well, let's begin by talking a bit about the works themselves. The Hobbit is actually a children's book. And it's called There and Back Again, and I prefer that title, actually. And I always called it Hobbit. And people just laughed at me when I was talking about it a few years ago, and people just like looked at me like, what are you talking about? It's not pronounced like that. I felt the same way when I started encountering people that called Hermione because I called her Hermione, and I was like, oh my god, I've been wrong my whole life. Okay, moving on. So, you know, The Hobbit is the story of Bilbo, and it's the story of personal growth, is the path of the hero, and it's perhaps the story that's more relatable throughout the whole of the books that Tolkien wrote. And not because of Bilbo is particularly a relatable character, because I don't think so. Neither are the dwarves. And this is not to sound a purist, but please, just the films were, oh my god, it's not that they were bad because they looked amazing, but please, please, Thorin does not die! Guys, Thorin does not die! I cannot stress this enough! The dwarves do not die. And that's something that had been bothering me a while. I'm sorry. I had to let it out. Moving along. So, The Hobbit and the story, no, the Battle of the Five Armies, blah, blah. It's very nice. You should read it. And if you find that you cannot read The Hobbit, please do not try and say, okay, I will like The Lord of the Rings. You're wrong. You can't. You will not. Do not attempt it. It's a suicide mission. The Hobbit is the lightest of them all. And it's really not that light. I mean, it is, but it's not. And, oh, I'm so sorry about that. And it's a lovely story. But it wraps up pretty nicely. I mean, you have its premise and then its conclusion. It's pretty self-conclusive. The Lord of the Rings is not like that. It's pretty referential to other works. And if you really want to understand The Lord of the Rings, you must have read The Hobbit and you must read The Silmarillion. It's necessary for you to understand them. I'm sorry, I need to drink some water. So I was saying, The Lord of the Rings is divided in three books, and each book is divided into two other books. Because you need to divide them because they're so big. They're so, so large. And the books are basically the movies, but they have so much more content in them. And it's really funny that they cut off so much in the Lord of the Rings movies and they added so much in the Hobbit movies. I found that amusing. And the Lord of the Rings is just this story, this epic battle. It's like The Lord of the Rings is the Star Wars of fantasy. As Star Wars is a space opera, The Lord of the Rings is a classic high fantasy, okay? Although there's not that much magic in it, and that's why it's a high fantasy, and a lot of people will say, oh, there's the magic. That's why what makes it elegant. But at the same time, there's not a lot of profound meaning in the social structures of things. You can read into it as in a historical level, but it's basically a battle of good versus evil. There's not a lot of gray here. Okay? Except if you look at Boromir. And perhaps Saruman, but he completely turned, okay? But, except of those cases, and Gollum, of course Gollum, but Gollum is like a special case. But that, I'm running out of options, I'm running out of cases, okay? And these books are huge, okay? And we're talking about three cases, okay? Three. The Faramir thing did not happen, guys. Don't forget about that. The movies just made it up. Okay, three cases. Three. The whole movies. Oh my god. Whole books. Okay? That's all there is. That goes to saying that what Tolkien was doing was creating a mythology for the creation of his languages. He always said that what happened with Esperanto and the other created languages that were rising up in the 20th century in an attempt to create a lingua franca always failed because they didn't have mythology behind them. And today we find people that are studying Kenya, that are studying Sindarin, that are the languages of the elves, basically. Sorry. And they're studying these languages, and actually they're teaching them in universities, and they have respect for them, and it's amazing. I mean, look how far we've come as a community when we can have a created language, an elvish created language, being taught in a university. That is amazing to me. If it's not amazing to you, then I don't know. what is. And then we have also the Silmarillion that is, of course, not a completed work of Tolkien, but of J.R.R. Tolkien, but rather of his son, Christopher, that did publish a lot of his works. He published some short stories afterwards, and also The Sons of Durin. He did a lot of work. He published it in 1977, and it's basically a compilation of a story that was rejected, that was actually supposed to be The Lord of the Rings. And it's basically the mythology of the creation of Arda and in itself Middle-earth, and how there is this god and this, let's say, angels, not to confuse people, and how it's basically an allegoric thing for Christianism, but you have it there written by Tolkien, and it's obviously fantastic in its nature, and it's very, very compelling. That's the first part. And then you have the Kenda Silmarillion, that it's the bulk of the collection, that has the chronicles and the story of the events that are before and during the first age of this world, this fantastic world, that includes the war over the Silmarils, that are these gems that give the book its title, no? And then you have the downfall of the Numenoreans, and then you have also the story of the Rings of Power. And all of that in this book. It's kind of the history of the world by Tolkien. Supposedly, what Tolkien wanted to do is to create a mythology where our world, because Middle-earth is supposed to be our world, but in the past. So he wanted to create a mythology for his languages, as I said, but also for our world, and for it to be more magical and more amazing and different from what we thought it was. And we're reaching the end of the show here. I hope that if you haven't read anything from Tolkien, you do it now. I know that it changed my life, and I hope it will change yours too. This was Nerd Nerd Nerdy, and this was, I don't know if my last or my next to last show on Mondays at 9 p.m. here at radio.dominican.edu. This was DJ Titania signing out.
You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Tune in Thursday nights on The Rewind, where we take you back in time with DJ Throwback.
Something I should have done a very long time ago.
Trees like torches blaze. laced with lies.
Trees like torches blazed with light.